Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at the blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I usually upload it to my Twitter every week, or I'll put it on Facebook sometimes, but basically it is twitter.com/StephenTheWarman, one word. Or you are at the most efficient way of getting the podcast, you are on iTunes. On iTunes, you just go Warman Kickfighting Show, and my podcast pops right up. I'm going to go ahead. I've got a big show today. Going to talk about some stadium stuff. Going to talk about Mike Zambides and his retirement fight. Victory, decent victory, I'll say a solid victory, B-level victory at least, because Victor Nagby's on his way up, but I want to talk about that for Jochen Klatt, and then of course I want to have a big preview show for the K-1 World Grand Prix, which is going to go down in about, 13 hours from now, but I want to do my best to get this out to you guys so that you can have a breakdown beforehand. Originally, I was going to do a State of the Game episode, that's what I talked about in the last week, but I looked at the layout, and I looked at the fact that K1's going to have their 70kg Grand Prix, which has significant history and so on, and I want to make sure that I gave it its ample opportunity on the show, despite the fact that it doesn't have the kickboxing names that it once had, even 6 years ago, it doesn't have those names. So we want to do our best to get kickboxing and Muay Thai out to the people. So this show is going to have a little bit for everybody, those stadium junkies, those kickboxing diehards. I hope I have everything in here for you. Going to go ahead and start off in those stadiums, the Rogers show. Rogers been putting on some shows, I'm going to grab a couple from New Lumpini as well. But I really am hoping that people are listening to these fights. I'll do my best to spell out the names. That way you guys can follow. I hope you guys are paying attention intently to some of the battles that I mentioned. Some of the names. Because you're going to notice names like Bacorn and Kongsak and Jovica on a regular. So I want you guys to keep following. Keep looking up these athletes. And I guarantee you're going to have some, memorable fights. And I know that sometimes the stadium fights, despite the fact that, the world kind of looks down in the clinch game in terms of its value towards entertainment. There's a reason why you'll see, the kickboxing fans are people who kind of birth from finding a K-1 brand of fighting. There's a reason why there's a community of those guys who just go crazy. When they see the clinch or when they see holding, it's seen as a part of the game, not the start of another part of the sport. It's more seen as the end of the kicking and punching part. And I could understand that. I understand that draw. I am a person that loves, both, and I'm a person that loves kickboxing. So I can understand how people could look at things that happen in a clinch and miss the subtleties, miss the, the positioning, the battle, the pummeling. Like, I can see how people can be like, that's not my thing. But if you can get a good understanding of it, it will really help you as a coach. If you're coaching as a fighter, of course, as you prepare yourselves to, one day possibly fight international. And then, of course, just as a fan, you'll be like, man, it's amazing what these guys are doing. Because it's not like these guys are like stalled out. They are really, really battling. Go to the best clinch guy in the world and he'll be able to hold top position. But the guy's going against, he's still going to be battling. He's still going to be pummeling back and forth. And I think that that's kind of the thing that makes the sport special. When guys get into those exchanges, they get into that pummeling, they get into those tie-ups, and the action doesn't slow down. And when I was in Thailand, the first time I went to Thailand, one of the best fights I'd ever seen in my life was between two 13-year-old kids. And it was a predominantly clinch battle, but the back and forth was so awesome that the crowd was in it and everything got loud and the betting went up and it was just all action. So definitely give the stadium stuff a try if you are just one of the diehards that kind of follow my show, but your focus is on more of the kickboxing game. There's definitely a couple fights I'm going to recommend to you, one in particular that I think that even if you didn't know anything about the sport or any guy in the sport, any major stadium player, this fight is a fight that will just be like, okay, that sport's awesome. So go ahead and go into some of the fights that of names that some of the guys that you guys might know. Jovica loses a decision to Sen Saturn. And it's weird because I thought Jovica, we're in the third round is when my video picks up. And in that third round, I thought Jovica was just too calm, too cool about things. Never turned it up. A third round usually means the action gets going. For those of you who follow the stadiums, there's usually a slow start, picks up a little bit more in the second, the third, and fourth, they're going, and then by the first minute and the fifth, it's usually already decided. And in that time, there's usually kind of a foot off the gas while one guy's still searching and looking to find a big shot. A big shot, which can come sometimes. Some people don't think it can. I watched Pecorn last year, probably a year and a half ago, be down in the cards, I want to say against Sigdom. And then all of a sudden he landed something big that got Sigdom in trouble. And then he was able to get the nod and decision because he scored the most significant score in that round, in that fight. And even though it slows, don't think that that guy who's pursuing is out of it completely. In this case, Jodrycia started the third round just a little bit too casual for my liking. I thought since Saturn got into the clinch, Jodrycia is really good at when he gets into the clinch tie-up, he does more of a, it's kind of an awkward style of an elbow, but it gets to the way that he plays clinch a lot. If you have your, I'll just go ahead and use the right hand example. So if you've got the right hand trying to control at the neck or around the collarbone, Jodrycia will use his left hand on that side and then throw an elbow over the top of what your clinch arm would be. And then when he throws it, if he scores it or if he misses it, he'll still use that left arm to then wrap behind your head. And he'll almost have you in a position where he looks like he's going to throw a head and arm type throw. That's what it kind of looks like from the clinch. And he'll just put his arm over and kind of hold you in like almost a side headlock and then throw knees from the side. That is a Jodrycia technique that not a lot of guys do. He likes to be in that position. And sometimes he can score knees. It's a weird spot because it's difficult to really generate power on your right knee when you've committed so much of your left shoulder and your left arm into, you know, holding the person in kind of a side headlock, as I mentioned before. But he likes to go to that position. He does it a lot. Like, you'll see it in a lot of Jodrycia fights. But here, I thought he didn't get into his game for a while, and I thought, especially late in the third, there was a series where Zen Saturn, if I remember correctly, kind of scored significantly in the clinch and kind of, you know, went straight at Jodrycia as he was kind of casually going backwards. Then after that, Jodrycia kind of trying to turn it up, try to score his little short elbows, try to get to that side clinch, as I mentioned to you before. But I just think that as the fight went on, he was always playing behind. He wasn't able to erase the earlier work, and then even between his work, since Saturn would land the most significant knee in the clinch, whereas Jodrycia would just be pushing and pushing the pace, and it just didn't happen. So this is a case where Jodrycia is still an awesome fighter. This loss isn't the end of the world, but I do think that he could have got himself going in the third round a little bit better. And this is a guy who, you know, 2 years ago was beating everybody. You know what I'm saying? 17 years old, beating everybody. Had some gym difficulties, moved to another gym, came back. He won his fight the last time I talked about Jodrycia. You're still going to be hearing a lot from him, you know, but this is a fight where I thought he got going too late. And I think if him and Seth Saturn fought again, I would still pick Jodrycia. Even though Seth Saturn's still very, very, you know, talented fighter. I just like Jodrycia in terms of his skill set. In the terms of his ability to one day fight internationally, gets the right people around him, he's a very, very good fighter. But he was not victorious today. The day was won by Sin Saturn, and I thought that it was a good performance. Next fight, I actually kind of disagree with the decision a little bit, you know. And I know when you talk stadium stuff, it's like, you know, because of the intricacies of how they score stuff in the stadiums, people feel like they don't have the right to challenge a score. You know, they feel like, okay, well, they know what they're seeing, so everything's right because the judges saw it. And I can understand people being in that situation. I can understand people taking that side. My personal opinion, realizing being in Thailand and how difficult it can be. And if you're in the stadium, if you go to like one of the, any of the gyms, ask somebody how do they score fights. And some people will, you know, attempt to answer it, but most of the trainers will say it's really difficult. Like, literally, that's a sense that they'll put together. It's hard, or it's hard to understand. And I actually think it's kind of funny whenever I get into those situations. But between having Rob Cox on and between my visits to Thailand, I felt comfortable saying, you know what, I know what they're looking for now, and sometimes they're going to disagree. And in this case, I disagreed. Konsak loses to Chesheron in a five-round decision. Three of the rounds were shown on TV. And in the three rounds, it really came down to what did you like better? Chesheron's clinch game or Konsak's body kicks? Because he was letting the left leg go, throwing it to the body, throwing it high. There's a period of time where I think Chesheron got himself in the lead in the fight. I would say it was in the third, where not only did he score some significant scores in the clinch, But after the left leg of Kunczak had scored, he fired his own right leg. And there's a couple times where he had threw Kunczak off balance with that, making it the most significant of the kicking exchanges. And I could see how that third had given him some opportunities to get the lead, to be in that position to you know, be playing ahead. But I really like Kunczak's body work. I like that he was pummeling well, despite being the shorter man. You know, one of the other reasons, or one of the other ways that I hear people say in Thailand that who wins the fight, they say the taller man always wins. And this is one of those situations where, you know, Kunczak, who's, you know, looking like Sanchai in there with a very tall Shajuran, and it looks like he's down. It looks like he's, you know, fighting up in the clinch all the time or whatever, but I still like him. I really, really liked his work in this fight. You know, everybody's different. Everybody's got their preferences. But I thought that he was letting that left leg go. I thought that he pummeled well for the most part. And I've got no problem with the decision not going his way. But I think that I liked his work. But Shajurion is, really letting that clinch game go, really push the pace. I think he knew what he needed to do to win, and he did so. So good stuff for him. We go from the new Limpidi fights that I was just mentioning. We're going to go ahead and go to the Raja Stadium. There's a couple of Raja fights. Muay Thai, as I mentioned it before, M-U-A-Y-T-I-E-S. They do a really good job of uploading fights on a regular. There's also at www.muaythais.com. I believe there's a Facebook page as well. Hey, give your likes, support, subscribe. They do a great job of getting fights up on a regular basis, to the tune of, you know, people are probably watching, you know, some of this stuff is, what, a couple days old, and the views are in the 12,000 and so on. So be a part of that community, you know. I would say that for his fights, they usually come, they average in terms of viewers somewhere between 8,000 and, you know, 14,000, I'd say, for most of the regular fights. But the ones that are really epic, that, you know, all of a sudden people start posting on their Twitters and posting on their Facebooks, those ones get a lot of traffic. I think that he is the person to watch. I don't know if it's he, it could be a she too, but that is the main person to watch as far as getting a lot of these shows. And I'll go ahead and get back to it. Back to the Raja Stadium, where we've got Sane getting a victory over Sungmini. Here it is again, where Sungmini is really letting that kick go, that body kick, and Sane has got the clinch game down. Another close decision, another decision where I don't mind that Sane got the victory over Sungmini, but man, I really liked the kick game. I thought the kick game was fluent, and I thought this is another example of, there was a period of time where Sungmini had landed his body kick, and the follow-up body kick from Sane was enough to knock him off balance. And I could see how that can affect the scorecards. But I don't want to disregard the work that, you know, the winner's doing. In these situations of these close fights, I've been making such an argument for the loser. But in this one, I really do think that Sane did a good job of getting top position in the clinch, pummeling well. When I say getting top position, I just mean that he did a good job of killing one of the arms and really, scoring elbows and controlling the wrist and bicep of Sungmini while he scored his knees. Subtle turns here and there. I think I can't remember if there was a period of time where there was a significant dump in the round. I can't remember the round off the top of my head, but I thought that, I want to say it was the fourth round, but I thought that combination of the dump score and I believe it was off of a turn as well. The dump score, the clinch, I really like that Sane got the victory, but I did like the work of Sungmini with those body kicks. Good victory for Sane. Now we're going to go to a fighter that I talk about, a couple fighters that I talk about quite a bit. They fight around 116 pounds, and this is Sprinter as he goes against Wan Chilong. This KO was legit. Like, just, it's just, sometimes it's just your positioning, but really, it came down to two guys kicking at the same time and one guy winning. And Wan Chilong was able to get that left leg up, caught Sprinter clean, and he was gone. KO. He was, you know, still not like dead. Like, you see that he was, you know, moving. He wasn't like out of it. He was still trying to, you know, get himself up, but he was done. And that was just a well-timed shot. Both guys were, and it was the second round too, so it wasn't even on the point where the fight had picked up. And for those who watch the sport a lot, the second rounds where a lot of those KOs happens with the high kicks, you know, because it's where people are playing the game and they're looking for selective, specific shots at a slower pace. Whereas when you're in the heat of it, you're too busy coming forward, and sometimes that kick misses, or sometimes that, you know, shot lands, but you had your hand up because you were moving in a certain way, or you're moving forward, or you're trying to get back in the clinch or whatever. It's when the game is slow that sometimes that high kick can score. So if you look at Muay Thai, you go through the history, you find like a lot of head kick victories in the stadiums. A lot of them come in the first round or second round because just the pacing. Like, it's just, it's played at a way where both guys are like, casually, whatever you've got is nothing for me. And then the wrong shot scores and somebody's looking at the ceiling. So this situation, both guys throwing kicks at the same time, and a clean head kick for Wang Chengliang gets him the victory. This next fight can be summed up simply. Muay Thai won the fight. That is all you need to know as far as the winner goes. The most important thing about the fight is the fight. There are times when your sport looks at its best. And for boxing fans, we knew that a whole bunch of eyes were going to be on the, you know, Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. So the thing that everybody was hoping for was the thing that everybody wore, that really didn't want to happen, happened. The most eyes were on your product when your product didn't look your best. And that's what, you know, even if people talk about the Canelo and Kirkland fight that happened just a week later, where it was such good action, even though it was such a short fight, but it was the sport at its best and the crowd at its best. In this situation, there's always going to be bitter feelings, and people are still complaining about the performance that happened between Mayweather and Pacquiao. And it's, to me, even, you know, it was written on the wall. It looked the way the fight that was, it was supposed to look. People are upset that it went the way that they wanted it, or that they thought it would go, not the way that they wanted it to go. So you always have a community of people that are upset when your sport doesn't look its best, when the most eyes are on it. The eyes of the Muay Thai world want you to see Thanachai versus Muay Thai. They want you to see it. And the reason why they want you to see it is because it's the kind of fight that represents the sport at its highest. The pace started in the second round between the significant scores with their body kick returns, the way they clinched, the elbows that they threw in the pocket. They were turning. There were dumps. The everything that you want in the sport was shown in this fight. But it was fast. Like, it wasn't like the pace was slow and you got to see these things. It just kept going. There's an example for me. There's a guy that I actually observe in the audience. He's got this weird-looking shirt. And he's sitting there chilling. And he's watching the fight. Guy next to him, you know, there's always cameras out and so on. And then it's as the fight picked up and got more awesome, this dude pulls out his camera. Like, I got to get this down. You know, this is the kind of fight that I have to have down. When I saw that, I was like, what it must have been like to be there. You know, when I was there, I went to the New Lumpini's been up since I've been to Thailand. But when I went to Thailand the second time and I went to the Lumpini Stadium, I'll never forget the pace of the fight that I witnessed. Like, I'll never forget that. These guys, very good fighters. And the crowd was really into it. And it was a reflection of what you wanted to see on that night. This fight right here between Thanachai and Muay Thai is a reflection of what you want the sport to see. Gotta watch this fight. I'll spell it out for you. Thanonchai versus Muay Thai, Muangthai. It's such high-level fighting. Like, there's every aspect of it in it. I couldn't break it down in terms of who I wanted to say, because there was such a back and forth affair. I'd have to literally, you know, give you the winner of every exchange or what happened in each back and forth. It'd be better if I did a play-by-play of the round rather than try to explain who's winning, who's losing, who's scoring, who's not, who's exchanging. This fight speaks for itself. Go out and watch these two athletes give their all. It's absolutely beautiful combat sport. Going to go ahead and finish on another type of beauty, though, the landslide beauty. Pecorin absolutely schools Dan Pannum, and it's weird because Pecorin, he started off, you know, scoring low kicks, played distant games. Dan Pannum would try to get into the clinch, and then he would, you know, score significant shots, and he'd beat him there. But Pecorin was all on showman game. After he would score something significant, he has fist up, he's playing to the crowd the whole time. There's a period of time where Dan Pannum came in and scored a knee in the clinch. So then Pecorin goes over, initiates the clinch, then turns him hard and dumps him. And it's just absolutely beautiful. And Dan Pannum gets up, keeps trying to walk and look for scores, keeps punching air, keeps getting countered with kicks. Pecorin is legit, you know, and of course he's coming. I think this is his first fight back in the stadiums. He's been doing the tour with Sanchai for Yukao as they go out there and they, you know, push the Yukao brand. But But Korn is still, Senshai is now retired from the stadium shows, I believe, and but Korn's still fighting in them. So he's coming off the win over Liam Harrison earlier this year, so he's doing the international work, and he's back doing the stadium work. This guy's all business. Korn is a guy, he's a very entertaining fighter to watch. As I recall his battles throughout the year, it's not just that he is winning these fights. There's a slickness to him. There is a power to him when he went in the international scene. He's a guy that you want to watch. So, Korn, definitely write that name down for Thai fighting in the international level. Good stuff from this stadium. And as I promised you guys, I'd been doing a bad job of doing stadium shows the last month. I think I've gotten you guys two really good breakdowns. I'll try to keep it consistent. At least 1 week of my podcast show every month will be dedicated to some of the major fights in the stadiums. I'll do my best to try to stay on this. So, thank you again for all those who've been patiently waiting for me to get back to the stadium stuff. I'll do my best to keep bringing it up, keep breaking it down. And speaking of, you know, promoting my love of stadium Muay Thai. Going to go ahead and go to Mike Zambides versus Steve Moxon. You know, I got to give Moxon credit. He fought just 2 weeks ago. And in that, two weeks ago when he had that fight, that was against Robert Van Roosmalen. And I thought that he did some slick stuff considering how many times Robert Van Roosmalen loaded up on big hooks, and I thought that Moxon would exchange, pick a moment to score, and then he'd slip and get out clean. I think he's finding that next part of his game as he pushes his career forward, because in the beginning he was just all killer. One of these things got to land, one of these things got to land. And you look at the case with Reese McAllister, he got it to land. Reese McAllister winning the fight, up two rounds, you know, absolutely dominated the fight, absolutely clean. I was like, and I told you guys all this story before. I was at that Glory event where that fight happened, and after Reese McAllister was up two rounds, I stopped paying attention to the fight. And then when I saw Reese McAllister after the fight, I thought he'd won. And then I asked him, but he goes, "No, man." He said, "I don't remember." He said, "Yeah, I got stopped in the third." And he was really good spirits about it, considering I made that mistake. And he said, "Man," he goes, "it's good to know that I was winning beforehand, but." That was Steve Moxon's special. Steve Moxon is a guy who throws that heat, gets into those exchanges. And once upon a time, when he first came on the scene, who'd they compare him to? Mike Zambides. Reason why, Steve Moxon, shorter guy, throws big power shots and hooks, looks for shots over the top, not afraid to bite down on the mouthpiece and get in exchanges. The shots are wide. They're not wild. They're wide. So Steve Moxon kind of had that style. And Mike Zambides, who, of course, is that huge Greece community in Australia, he was trying to build on some of those guys with that style, attempting to be a big name kickboxer in that part of the world. Mike Zambides winding down his career, finishing his career in this fight, fought just, a month ago, and it really was a very Mike Zambides performance, but it showed in his age that he can still find some slickness to it. When I mean by slickness, I don't necessarily mean that you score a shot in a weird angle in a weird way. I just think that your shot selection at periods of time during the round shows that you know a little bit more about the game. So whereas you used to bite down and just throw the bombs the whole round, now you score big bombs and you just move to the right just a little bit. Let the other guy chase you. Let the other guy reset. Little stuff like that. And in this fight, you can make the argument that Mike Zambides won every round. I thought, in my personal opinion, I had it, 49 to 46. And I thought Steve Moxon had some good moments in a lot of those other rounds. But there would just be a period of time in almost every round where Zambides would take control with more consistent offense, where Steve Moxon was still playing a game where he wasn't getting into the flow of his offense consistently throughout the round. He had the slickness that he had against Robin Van Roosmalen, who was a little bit taller. He didn't show it as much with this one. I just think he was more bite down on the mouthpiece, trying to stay in the pocket, trying to read the punches. And then a lot of people lean out of the way when they're going against Mike Zambides because he's short. So as long as they can lead past his jumping hooks, they should be in good shape. But here, Zambo would always put something together. Some sort of combo, some sort of, hook exchanges. He just does a good job, has a really good feel for understanding how rounds are scored and how they should be scored and where he needs to be effective. So this was all about Mike Zambides closing the show. Fifth round, even in the fifth round where I was like, okay, Steve Moxon's probably going to win this round. You know what I'm saying? Not a lot of exchanges, not a lot was happening. And then in the last minute and 10 seconds, Zambides just starts putting offense together. And it's the same beautiful combinations and kicks that he did his whole life, combinations to high kicks. He just got the offense going. And it's almost like you've been told in the corner you got one more round for the rest of your life. You hear that all the time. But what happens when it really is the one more round for the rest of your life? It should look like what Mike Zambides did, where he moved around, got the feel, looked for offense, and then left it in there. And just really put together a string of awesome offense with his hooks, with his high kicks. And at the end of the round, end of the fight, they put some belt on him. Of course, you guys know how I feel about belts. But I just think that it was just a wonderful moment. It was just a wonderful moment for a wonderful career of a guy who was once considered the best kickboxer on the planet. He used to fight 10, 12 rounders. People can't even fathom that anymore. But he used to do kickboxing rounds, whether 3 minutes or 2 minutes, go find his fight against Oskin, for example, where that's what he'd do. There's no clinch. It was just like boxing, but with low kicks. And that was where he came up. He came up on those kind of fights. He had his first pro fight at 16 years old, I want to say, or 15 years old. And he went against a guy who was 31, 32. And it started from there. Started to have a lot of success in Greece. Next thing you know, they wanted to bring him out to Australia. People know that entrance music. It just gets the crowd going. One of my favorite moments, my earliest moments of Mike Schiavello, is him doing the commentary for Mike Zambides. It's just absolutely like it just gives you chills when you think about that music coming on. Mike Schiavello promoting it as he comes out there. Mike Zambides had a great career. From there, going to the K-1, I talk about it all the time. He had the fight with Masato, and in the fight with Masato, most people don't remember this, but Masato scored a down on him. It was a weird down, like Zambides had paused for a second. He was backing up, and then Masato came after him with a flurry of punches. Nothing's landing, like big, but Moxon may have been hurt from something else. And he goes down, and then he gets up. And when he gets up, he continues to beat Masato up for 2.5 rounds, or the rest of that round, and then the next 2 rounds. He's just landing big-time shots to the point where you're like, I can't believe Masato's getting hit like this. Because of the down, because of Japan, however you feel it, whether you feel it was fair or not, I thought at least an extra round was earned, but Mike Zambides was not able to beat Masato. And his career then became about the guy who was so good but couldn't get out of the first round of the tournament. Lost to Kohei Maki in the first round of the tournament. Just had this long stream of guys that, Masato again. He just couldn't get out of that first round. And then he finally was able to later in his career. He put on, and I felt he won, he put on one of the better performances against George Petrosian. He had beaten Januzu. I want to say that was his first round opponent in that tournament. He'd beat Januzu, and then he'd come against Petrosian in the second round, and there it is. The power hooks, the wide shots, the hooks to the body. I thought that he'd won that fight. I just think that people were just in the habit of saying Petrosian wins the round. It was just kind of, because it's Petrosian, so you just get into it. But I really thought that night Kraus and Zambides really put on good performances. And Zambides' performance in particular, I think, could have won him the fight. But good stuff, good career by Zambides. I'll never forget his knockout over Albert Kraus, because I think that was the thing that really opened up the world's eyes to him. He had some really good battles, win or lose, against a lot of top guys. And it's just a great, wonderful, memorable career. And anytime somebody says there's a next one of you, like they said about Steve Moxon or whatever, you've done something special. So congratulations to Mike Zambides on what was an awesome, awesome career. Going to go ahead and go to Yotsen Klai's victory. And I believe the promotion was called T1 Promotion in China. Gets victory over Victor Nagme. And for those of you who've watched Yotsen Klai before, no matter who he fights, it's all about the right hook when it comes to his hands. Like that, that's the shot. The things that he does with his right hands are the things that he could score a significant left-hand shot. But from his southpaw stance, he's absolutely vicious with that right hook. He'll put an off-speed jab to interrupt your offense and then come back with more offense behind it. In this fight with Victor Nagme, Victor had thrown an elbow early in the fight, and it was almost like Yotsen Klai was like, game on. Go ahead and watch all of the Yotsen Klai fights that you can find on the international level. I can't think of one where he threw as many elbows as he did in this fight, not including Thai fight, because Thai fight, nobody includes that anymore. That's kind of more like just a spectacle. Whereas this was a case where I'm like watching it and I go, I can't believe how much offense these guys are putting together. I can't believe how good these athletes are and what they're performing. Just really, really good stuff. I really liked it a lot. I think that Yotun Klai slowed in third. I don't know if it was Pete. I think that he had kind of took the foot off the gas when he was well up. There's about 40 seconds left. But he, you know, got hit some. Victor Nagby's no joke. You know, he's got the victory, the high kick victory over Kim Sitsang Nung. He's no joke. You know, like, he's a tough guy. He was a smaller guy in this one. And he throws straight punches, and he commits, and he pushed. And because they were southpaw, he was able to score here and there. But, man, I cannot stress you enough that Yotun Klai is just too good, too slick. He put the body kick in there some, but the killer this time was his work with his hands and his work with the elbows. There's a great picture on Instagram for Yotun Klai. I think it's Yotun Klai 1 for those who are interested. And he's standing, face absolutely, you know, clean. It looked like he just got there. And Victor Nagby, who they had stopped the fight several times to look at cuts, is just all beat up in the background. Perfect. It's just one of those perfect historical type of pictures, and I really thought that that was a really good job done by Yotun Klai, who, you know, of course, all the buzz is that there's a chance that he could fight Bukau before the year's over. Everybody would love to see that. That fight segues perfectly into the other fight from the promotion that I wanted to talk about. Bukau Bechement gets another victory as he defeats Artem Parshporin on the same exact card, the T1 in China, and Bukau, it's just, sometimes people forget how good he is. He's very, very talented. And it got lost because he had all of those, you know, tie fights where he just didn't go against guys who were even close to his level. Every once in a while, there'd be, you know, a tournament and have like a name like Abraham Queenie or something like that would be in the field. But in the end, he'd end up going through the field and the toughest guy he would face would be the guy he faced in the final of that. But for the most part, he was given guys that he could just knock out, and it helped build his brand, because in Thailand, I remember when he was famous in Japan, when I first went to Thailand, he wasn't as known. But when he started doing Thai fight, then a lot of people, a lot more of the casual person knew him. Now, what I mean by he wasn't as known, internationally, everybody knew Bukau, but the stadium guys were still king. But the, you know, for those who do follow it, and there is a community in Thailand of upper class, you know, people who, middle to upper class people who aren't as moved by the stadiums. The stadiums are almost seen as, you know, where poor people are. You know what I'm saying? You know, like it's considered a way for people in poverty to move out of poverty. And there's a community who are much more interested in, you know, soccer or football. You know, like that. That's just kind of the way it is culturally. So Bukau, when I first got there, you know, there are people who knew his name here and there, but the people who wanted to fight him were people like Yotun Klai, who also fought internationally. So Bukau, through the years after K1 and so on, he's still been fighting. He's still been winning, you know, a lot. You know, but people forget how talented he is, due to the disappointment of the fact that he's not fighting, you know, Petrosian and Robin Van Roosmalen once a month. You know what I'm saying? He's still really, really good. And Artem Parshporin had some moments where he's bringing it to him. Early in the fight, Bukau went for a sweep, and he didn't get it, so he kind of did more like a foot behind him, and he kind of tripped him. It wasn't a planted foot. It wouldn't be what I would call the most legal of tactics, you know, depending upon your ref. And then when he got up, Artem was able to catch a kick, and then he got a sweep right back, saying, you know, Bukau, it's game on. I'm in this. He scored an elbow shortly after that in a clinch exchange. And then Bukau started to land some significant body shots. When these body kicks started to score, all of a sudden you just watch the life drain out of Artem Parshporin. Like, you, all of a sudden he's no longer pushing forward, no longer to look to get into exchanges. And by the second round, you know, I'd even say by the end of the first round, so many body kicks had got through clean that Parshporin had started to walk himself into the corner. Bukau wasn't walking him down. Bukau was standing in front of him. Artem was going back to the corner so he could buy some time. And a lot of reasons why people do that, if you watch fights, is because they're looking to hold you. It's so much tougher to try to grab a person in the middle of the ring. You can get it, but they can move. There's so much space for them to move. It's better for you to just kind of walk yourself into a corner, and then usually people will do offense where they fall on you and you can hold. It's like a tactic that people do without realizing it. It's just, I'm going to buy myself some time. I'm going to walk myself over to this corner, and then when he comes at me with some offense, I'm going to, you know, grab on and then buy some time, catch a break, let my body heal. Like, it's a tactic that people do without thinking about it. It's like no teacher teaches that tactic. It's just something that in the survival of me watching fights, when I watch excuse me, in me watching fights, the survival that kind of takes place in athletes during the heat of combat in combat sports, there's something in them that knows where to go, when to take a break. And Artem was walking himself over the corner, and then there was a series where Bukhaev caught one of his kicks, returned with his own kicks, and in that flurry, he landed a right hand, and Artem, you know, was dropped, fell into the ropes, took it to standing eight count. After that, more body kicks, and you could just see in the body language, Artem is just absolutely, he's out of it. Like he's out of it mentally. He didn't take any huge shot to the head, out of it mentally. There was a period in the third where he threw a high kick that almost got through, but for the most part, he was done. And Bukhaev, and this is a fighter IQ thing I want to tell you guys, that, you know, some people like me do the technical. I'm going to tell you something a little bit more fighter IQ that comes up. And this isn't something that, you know, happens in terms of countering and tactics. This happens in terms of breaking someone down as far as beating them in a fight. And this one, Bukhaev already knew he had scored the body kick significantly, already knew that he was up in the cards. Artem had threw a body kick, and when Artem's body kick got through, he would usually turn it over into a defensive guard, which means you drop the knee and you kind of use your shin as a shield to kind of keep the other person away. And when he did this, Bukhaev earlier went for the sweep off of it. Like, he went for a sweep with his leg, and he realized that Artem's guard was long enough, but the shin guard was long enough to keep him away. He had pushed on that, he pushed as Bukhaev kicked, and Bukhaev kicked right under him, wasn't able to get the sweep. The next time they went to that, and this is what shows growth in the fight, Bukhaev just held the leg and threw two power shots to the body with his right hand, and Artem just crumpled and turned. He spent the third round turning away whenever Bukhaev would come at him with body shots, and it's a fighter IQ thing. It's something that you realize when you're in there. It's not something that you do, you know, necessarily. You can work it on the pad. You can say, hey, score here, and then look to come back to it a little bit later. But that was an adjustment that happened in the fight. He took a body kick from Artem. He tried to sweep underneath it. Artem turned on the shin, turned his knee over, went with a shin guard and kind of kept him away. Then after he realized that guard, that same kind of guard came up to play defense, Bukhaev just held onto the leg and threw two big right hands to the body, to the stomach that weren't blocked, and Artem folded. I'm telling you, he was like spinning as Bukhaev would attack him in the corner. He was looking out of the ropes. It was just all bad. It was the kind of, when are these 3 minutes done? And he was looking for the end of the fight sometime in the second round and still had to stay tough throughout it. And the last minute of the fight was just Bukhaev doing jumping elbow stuff that wasn't significant at all, that he probably shouldn't have done. But, you know, he's just trying to do something for the crowd and trying to land something spectacular as the fight went out. But it's good that Bukhaev's active. I'm glad he got this win. I'm glad that he's floating between kickboxing and Muay Thai. Stay active. Keep fighting. Keep being a prize fighter. This guy has, he's a winner. You know, he's 31 years old, still very, very good. I'm not sure when he's going to wrap it all up. You know, I don't know what time he's thinking about stopping, but I know that Bukhaev has really, really excelled in the international scene despite not being a part of Glory or K1, which is almost impossible to do, but he's done it. I am going to enter into the K1 tournament field now, and the first thing that has to be said is the core of Japanese athletes that they have at 70 kgs do not compare to the athletes that they have in the lower weight classes. Koyarube is the best 60 kg fighter in the world. Like he is in kickboxing. You're going to be tough to find a guy that's going to beat him at 60 kgs. It's going to be tough. You know, he is a really talented fighter. He'd been fighting up all this time, fighting at 65 kgs and 63.5 kgs, whatever. He'd been fighting up, but he is going to be really, really tough. In the same family is the most competitive guy at 60 kgs, Hirotaka Urobe. They were the ones that met in the final of the 60 kg tournament. The reason why I bring their names up, the reason why I bring Masaki Nori's name up, is because when you get over 65 kgs, you are no longer talking about weight classes where they have the best athletes in the world. There's a reason why they struggle to produce a K1 heavyweight. Satake did such a good job representing them, in the early days of K1. But really, he was outmanned by those better, bigger heavyweights. And he, you know, still put on good performances and really gave it his all. I think he got to the final one time, got to the semifinal another time for Satake. But there's been struggle there. 70 kgs is only a weight class internationally, really, because of Masato, you know, because of the Max brand. That's when, it's not that people didn't fight around that weight class, it's that that weight class wasn't known. Since Masato, you look at the athletes that have been fighting at 70 kgs, Yoshiro Sato, very solid fighter. Makes a lot of sense. He was originally supposed to be in this tournament. He is not in the tournament anymore. He's a good athlete at 70 kgs. Yamamoto, there's some guys in the past that they've had at this weight class. The core of athletes that they have that are competing in the 70 kg tournament this year don't compare to an international stage at all. I've got one of the guys possibly getting out of the first round and moving to the second round, and that's a big stretch. I really think that the field will come down to two other athletes, but I'm going to go ahead and break the tournament field down in full. First, we're going to go ahead and start with the reserve fight. Kazuya Akimoto is going to lose to Sergei Adamchuk. Adamchuk's having quite the month. He is going to be the first person that I can think of to fight for both Glory and K1 in a calendar year and in a matter of, you know, a month. Like, he just 1 month ago, he was a short notice replacement, came in, competed, and got a victory over Murat Gagarin, who's in this tournament, no less. But Sergei Adamchuk is more of a 65 kg fighter. I still feel that way. But man, he's got good pop. He's got a really slick southpaw style. Akimoto's got nothing for him. Akimoto's going to come out there. He's going to, you know, give his heart. He's going to let his hands go. He's going to try. But he's just not in the league of Sergei Adamchuk, who's just too slick, too much movement. Adamchuk will be the winner of this tournament and will be hoping, or excuse me, the winner of this reserve fight and will be hoping for someone to follow the tournament. Yamazaki has a really good chance of beating Murat Gagarin just because Murat Gagarin is susceptible to run into offense. He's going to lose to Murat Gagarin anyways. Murat Gagarin is just the pace that he fights at. When he gets his offense going, it's just, you just can't get him off of you. Just constant offense, constant hands. He's just going to keep pushing the pace, keep pushing the pace. The only thing Yamazaki has in his favor is there's a chance that Murat could slow as the round goes on. And his style, usually, Murat Gagarin's style isn't really good for tournament style style fighting. He usually slows after a period of time. But man, the dude can go. Like, the dude is gonna bring constant offense. Yamazaki just won't be able to hold up under that. One of the better fighters and has again an okay chance of winning. Magihira Kida is still gonna lose to Dylan Salvador. Like, he's not. It's not that he's untalented, but Dylan Salvador is a very slick fighter. Who can go power when he needs to. He's got a win over Sidichai earlier this year. He's a good fighter and a legit win over Sidichai. I'm not saying that he went out there and, you know, got a decision that shouldn't have gone his way. He went out there and really turned it up with his low kick game, really came back with a counter game, bit down in the mouthpiece. I've said it when I first saw him at 19 years old when he fought in Thai fight. I was like, of Nasser Kassim's guys, this is the guy that I like the most. This is the guy that can most take over where Fabio Pinca was in terms of international recognition and surpass it because he's in the right weight class. Sonny Dalback is the other elite guy in this tournament, and him and Dylan Salvador look like they're on a path, but Sonny Dalback's got the guy who's probably got the most notable name of the 70kg guys. Hiroki Nakajima is still going to lose to Sonny Dalback. Like, they're just, he's just not as good. Sonny's got this really weird style because, he's a slick southpaw. He can drop you with both hands. That body kick game he's been focusing on because he's been in Thailand for a long time. Used to kind of come more with the hands and pop the low kick, almost Dutch style-esque. But he's got the body kick down, really performs really well. And he can fight back when hurt because Jordan Watson had him hurt, had him hurt to the legs, but he still was able to score something significant and get the stoppage earlier this year. Sonny Dalback is having a good year with a win over Yoshihiro Sato and then, Jordan Watson. Very, very good year. He's going to win this fight. The only Japanese fighter that I have getting through, and a really good chance that he's going to lose too, Dekai Watabe has got a really good shot of beating Jordan Pikuru, who is the least known of the guys in the tournament field. But if he could just stay, I mean, he's a desktop fighter. If he could just stay with combination kick game, he's probably going to beat Watabe anyways. But I think Watabe's got the best chance of this group of fighters to get to the next round, so I've got him winning. In that next round, there's no way Watabe beats Sonny Dalback. Dalback's just too good. He's just too talented of a fighter. He's, this is just really slick southpaw, really good stuff. I think that he's going to get a stoppage in this second fight. I think he's going to get a stoppage over Nakajima too. I think Sonny Dalback is going to come into this tournament, get two stoppages right off the bat. Sonny Dalback beats Watabe, moves into the final. The other fight, I've got Dylan Salvador versus Murat Grigoryan. As I mentioned before, I don't think Murat Grigoryan's work rate, despite the fact that he's put on some good performances in tournaments before, I don't think that it holds up in tournaments, especially if the guys are elite. So the best thing he can have go for him is if he can get a stoppage over Yamazaki, something that buys him more energy to fight longer. With that said, I still think Dylan Salvador is too slick for him. I never seen anybody just run Dylan Salvador over, period. Like, even if he loses, nobody runs him over. And he's slick. He's got good... Dylan Salvador doesn't have great power, but he's got solid, unfinished shots. Like, he can score big. He's not the kind of guy that, you know, he just... he's not going to have you Mike Zambidis, you know, looking up at the ceiling, you know what I'm saying, with some of the shots that he scores. He's got that good power, though. Like, he's got good... This guy can, you know, this guy's punching for real. I think that he gets the victory over Murat Grigoryan and moves into the final. In that final, it's going to be Sonny Dalbec and Dylan Salvador. I'm going to break that fight down after I break down some of the other super fights. Hirotaki Urube is going to beat Toshi. He is still an elite guy at 60 kgs. Despite the fact he lost his brother in the final, he's still one of the best fighters in the world. Still very, very talented. I expect him to... stop Toshi, because that is the thing that Hirotaki kind of brings to the table that a lot of guys didn't. That power at that weight class. He can really, really crack, and I think that he's going to stop Toshi. I'll say first round. Going to go ahead and move into the 65 kg, and this is one that's got, you know, ramifications for the best fight in the world. This is a 65 kg fight between Minoru Kimura and Masaru Glunder. Masaru Glunder burst on the scene with his win over Masaki Nori. It was a cut victory. Masaki Nori had the opportunity maybe to come back in the fight, but he started off slow, and Masaru Glunder came out hot, and he was able to score a jumping knee to score the cut, was able to stay on him offensively. He's winning the round throughout. Masaki Nori never got out of first gear, and he lost by cut in the corner. I look at that performance, and I look at his offense, and I look at Kimura. Kimura is a guy, I've said it before, I'm not high on him because he can't win kickboxing rounds. He's more of a power guy who can score a shot that can, you know, have you looking at the ceiling. He does have that kind of power. He's not beating Masaru Glunder because he doesn't have the kickboxing skill set to win. And I think Glunder's chin is good enough. Glunder, I think he's 19 years old, maybe going on 20 now, or maybe gone to 20. But he is a talented fighter. They did a little interview with him. He's there with Mike Pastanier. I don't think Mike was there for his first fight, so I'm sure he's really, really excited about that. Mike did a couple guys on the card. Again, Mike's gym shows up with a guy who is of Serenese descent, living in Holland, and a guy who is from the Ukraine, yeah, with Sergey Adamchuk. So it's just funny that just the athletes that go to Mike's gym to make it, and he's showing up with some really good fighters, and I think he's excited. He's got the better fighter here. He's got that better kickboxer, so I really think that Glunder... I don't even think Kimura is going to land that significant shot at all. I don't think he's going to land anything that's going to have Glunder dazed. I think Glunder's going to be able to really get things going. Might even score a stoppage with a jumping knee as the fight goes on. I think Glunder gets a stoppage in the late second or third round. The other super fight, two more super fights I want to talk about. Takura, of course, we know he's all about KOs. He's going to get his shot at Hakim Hamech. I think Takura wins. He's a very talented fighter. 55 kgs is his right now. I just want to see more of him. The more he gets out there, this is why this is a good platform for him. K1, this card is doing a good job of showing their best. Koya Urube, Hirotaki Urube, Takura, they got to make sure people see these guys. And Takura getting a KO over Hakim Hamech. I think Hamech has got a good chance to make it. I don't think he will. But Takuru is definitely a guy that you want to watch. All action guy who really lets those hands go. Last super fight I'm going to talk about is Koya Urube, as he is going to beat Konstantin Trishan. Konstantin Trishan's not weak. He's got some good skill set. But Koya Urube is the guy who I think he's the best in the world. As I've called him my son in this show for like 5 years. It's crazy to watch him grow. He tried to do it at the bigger weight classes. They were not his weight class. He's got a home at 60 kgs. He's strong there. He looks completely different. Like, he's got all this hair now. He's like, you know, clean-cut kid that I remember watching as he was coming up in the Koshin for K1 back in the day. Lost in the final. The only time that the K1, when they put the tournament together, of course, they had a vision for it, who they wanted to win, and so on. And Arubi is just a guy who I'd seen in the tournament field thinking, you know what, this kid's going to be something. He's going to be something. And then all of a sudden, he's getting the fights in Crush. He's getting the fights in opportunities outside of the K1 brand. And it helped him as a fighter. He grew, got better, developed a really slick style, knew how to set in his punches. He's, you know, has a bad stoppage loss to a bigger Masaki Nori, but then he was just right back at it, right back to being a professional fighter. He wins the 60kg tournament. He's going to be Konstantin Trishan. Trishan's not weak. He's got some good skill set. He's going to bring some good things. I just think Urubay is the better fighter. Also, Ku Fairtex is going to go against in a rematch of the 65kg tournament final where he met Yasumi Soda. Soda, of course, is coming off of the victory over Yuta Kubo. Ku Fairtex is a guy who, I mean, he lost to Minoru Kimura, a fight that he shouldn't have lost. They should have at least gone to an extra round. He clearly won the first two rounds. He was dropped in the third round. It should have gone to an extra round. It wasn't even in doubt for me. But K1 had one of the rounds closer. I think the judges went 10-10 on it, and then that allowed him to lose the fight in that final frame. And I think that he's just too slick, too skilled for Soda. Soda's still good, still very talented, and it's good that his last fight was against the Southpaw, but he's just not good enough to beat Ku Fairtex, who's still very talented, can crack. He's going to get a decision of victory here. We go to the final, where I'm trying to talk myself into saying Dylan Salvador is going to beat Sonny Dalback. I love Dylan Salvador. You're going to do it. I'm going to go with him. Dylan Salvador is going to beat Sonny Dalback and win the 70kg K1 Max tournament. I think that he's going to really be steady with his low kick game. That's where he's going to have to do most of his eating. He's going to have to block the body kick strong and look for his counters, because Dylan Salvador can win a fight just playing counters. He can just sit there and play strong counter game. And I think that he's going to do so. Sonny Dalback, his hands are the difference, you know, because I think that he can score slick enough to get up on Dylan Salvador. But I've been pushing Salvador to be a star in his sport. And even though this isn't a tournament field with Robin Van Roosmalen and Andy Bristy and Sidichai, even though there are some elite names missing from this tournament field, the European side of it, which is pretty much the European side of it, it's still a pretty good card. It's still pretty good, pretty well put together. I'm excited to see what happens from it. Should be a fun night to fight. Everybody, make sure you get the opportunity to go out, watch these fights, support these athletes. It should be a lot of fun. I really think that this is a quality card, and I think that there's a lot of action and entertainment in it for everybody. So do your best to go out, watch this K1 card. I might do the whole take a nap and then get up in the morning, see if I can find a stream of it. I might do that. Or just kind of sleep through and see what pops online later the next day. Old school ways, us old school people, we were all about, back when K1 would have these K1 Max shows and, you know, K1 heavyweight shows, we would hop up at, like, you know, for me it's 3 a.m., 4 a.m., and then just watch the show until like 8 in the morning my time, you know, because that's what I was used to. That's what we're used to in the States. So I'm excited about it. I think it's a good tournament field. It doesn't reflect the best fighters in the world, but it reflects a high-level tournament win. And it's probably going to be the best 8-man tournament of the year as far as the 70kg tournament goes. I just don't think that anything else is going to be put together. Glory's been staying the four-guy tournament. So unless they, you know, decide to come back or switch it up at the end of the year, expect this to be the tournament for the weight class, you know. So the tournament for the weight class this year. Should be a lot of fun. Sonny Dalback can win it all. He's going to continue to stay in my mind as one of the fighters of the year. The thing that works against him, of course, is his side of the tournament bracket isn't that strong. Whereas Salvador, if he beats Maraca Gorian and then Sonny Dalback, that would be more notable than Sonny Dalback beating, you know, Watabi or Picuro, and then beating, you know, beating Nakajima in the first one, and then beating Dylan Salvador in the final. I think that Dylan Salvador's would be a more notable run. I wouldn't rule out an injury, getting Sergey Adamchuk in it, and that would just change the whole game up, because Adamchuk has got a good style for Dylan Salvador. He angles really well, so should be a lot of fun. There's a lot of good stuff on this card. There's some, you know, preliminary card guys, but I didn't want to focus on them. I really wanted to focus on the bulk of this card. So everybody go out, support the kickboxing brand, and really, really support, promote these athletes. If you get a fight and you like it, put it up on your Facebook page for people to see. We got to have more of that online. You guys have seen the online, how things have been in the world of late. There's been a lot of negativity, man. Kickboxing, wonderful sport. Get your escape in kickboxing. Really enjoy the brand. Enjoy the athletes. Enjoy high-level combat sports. You guys have a good night, and I'll catch you later. God bless. Peace.